Welcome to Mom and Up.
With your co-host, developmental psychologist Dr. Marty Erickson and Dr. Aaron Erickson, maternal child health specialist and nurse practitioner.
Here's my grandma, Marty. And here's Aaron, my mom and Nana.
Welcome to Mom Enough. I'm Marty Erickson here today with my daughter Erin, and we are going to be talking about a topic that is certainly near and dear to both of our hearts and to those of the children in our family, and to our guest, Kathy Jordan, Dr. Kathy Jordan, who is here to talk with us about some of the latest findings on why nature experience is important at every age. And we're talking particularly about children, but I think that definitely applies to adults as well. Kathy Jordan directs sustainability education and leadership development for the Institute on the Environment at the University of Minnesota, and she's also director of research for the Children in Nature Network. That's an organization that we've talked a lot about here on Mom Enough, because I was fortunate to be one of the founders of that organization back in 2006, and it was built around the wonderful writing and thinking of Richard Louv, who has also been with us numerous times on Mom Enough, the author of Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. So I know many of you have heard us talk about this organization and this topic before, but Kathy is bringing her expertise as the director of research for that organization and talking to us about what some of the new findings are that really support how important nature experience is to children's learning, development, health, and well-being. I should note that Kathy also is a professor of pediatrics in the University of Minnesota Medical School, where she practiced as a pediatric neuropsychologist earlier in her career. And I know that Kathy also is more than a mom enough, having raised a remarkable daughter and son who are making the world a better place. And when I see Kathy, who's been a friend and colleague of mine for many years now, I always love hearing about what her two young adult kids are up to. And it's always good stuff. So welcome, Kathy.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here with you.
Well, I'm so thrilled to be talking about this topic, especially as my son has just departed on a very lengthy, I think 40 plus day backpacking trip in the Arctic with one of our Minnesota YMCA camps, Camp Minogen. And we have just had so much fun as a family, kind of introducing our kids to the wilderness and to nature experiences and in sharing those experiences together. And then now as a mom to see my son go off and do these incredible things in nature is so rewarding. And I think that we have personally experienced so many of the benefits of nature. And I know you have a wealth of knowledge about the latest findings on the why nature experience is so important. So what are some ways that exposure to rich natural environments and high quality nature-based programming contributes to children's functioning?
Well, you know, at Children in Nature Network, we have this sort of saying that nature makes kids happier, healthier, smarter, and better stewards of the environment. And the research really does support all of those, you know, outcomes. Those are phrased in really layperson terms, but it's all true. And I can tell you a little bit about research in each of those areas. So, for example, you know, smarter sounds kind of funny, but I think we talk about smarter in terms of cognitive development and cognitive function. And one of the ways that we think about cognitive function is regarding attention. One benefit is the ability to concentrate better during and after spending time in nature. And that has to do with the idea that there are two systems in our brain regarding attention. One is the effortful directed attention that we use when we are studying, working, taking a test, those sorts of things. And that system can get tired and we can feel depleted. The other system is the non-voluntary, the sort of soft fascination, the system that just sort of takes over when something captures our attention and we just go with the flow. And when that happens, which often happens in nature, it allows the directed, effortful system to take a break. And then when we come back to our work, our studying, or whatever, we feel replenished. And so that's called the attention restoration theory. And it's one of the prominent theories about how nature impacts kids' brains. In contrast to attention, which is really a temporary state, intelligence is a more stable, we used to think of it as immutable. It's not immutable. The environment does have positive and negative effects on intelligence and IQ test performance, both in good and bad ways, but it's just a slower process than that momentary state of attention. And looking at intelligence in the context of research on kids and nature is relatively newer, and most of it is around greenery around children's homes. But the evidence is for higher IQ scores for at least urban kids when they live near greenery. And I think that that could actually translate into the school environment and the daycare environment, because those are certainly environments where kids spend a lot of hours. So greenery around those sort of daycare and educational environments could impact their intelligence. I think we haven't seen that as much in the research yet, but I think we will. And then this one just drives me crazy with how exciting this is. You know, it's one thing to think about nature exposure supporting IQ test performance, but it's really another thing to think about nature being so powerful that it actually changes the structure of the brain as it develops. But that actually can happen. There is research that suggests that the more greenery around children's homes, the bigger the brain in certain areas that tend to be related to performance on things like memory and attention. Again, this is not about schoolyard greenery, it's about residential greenery, but I think every environment that kids spend lots of time in, the more green those environments are, the more likely those environments are to influence even something incredible like how the brain grows over time as the child develops. So that's fascinating to me in terms of being a neuropsychologist and brain function, but I was also a clinical psychologist in my earlier life, and so I'm also very concerned with kids' emotional function, mental health. We know that kids have taken a huge hit during COVID, and their mental health has just really declined, and people are talking about this as a mental health crisis or an epidemic, you know, in and of itself. And we need to do something to make school a place where, you know, kids' mental health is supported. And generally, studies find that contact with nature supports positive mood, it reduces symptoms of depression, it makes kids feel more calm and relaxed. And, you know, for kids, school can be taxing, either socially or cognitively. And too much stress makes it hard for kids to pay attention, hard to learn when you can't pay attention. And so what can we do? And I'm a real proponent of nature-based learning, and that can come in numerous forms. One form that actually has a really interesting finding associated with it is forest school, which just means getting, you know, doing school outdoors one day a week, let's say. All the subjects, you know, kind of integrated, multidisciplinary sort of way, but you're outdoors the whole day. And there was a study in Norway by a colleague, Julie Detweiler, who looked at two groups of elementary age kids. I think they were about 11 years old. And one group spent a day a week in forest school in their outdoor environment, just doing school in that setting. And the other group stayed in their classroom for that that same period of time, you know, all year. And they did cortisol samples, saliva samples, looking at cortisol, which is a hormone that basically tells us about the body's reactivity to stress. And they measured cortisol over the course of the day during that forest school day or with the classroom-based room that same day, but you know those kids were in the classroom. And a healthy sort of daily rhythm of cortisol would be that it sort of starts high in the morning and then it declines over the course of the day. And this study was really amazing because what they found was that the kids who had that forest school experience showed that normal daily rhythm of a healthy stress physiology. Cortisol started high in the morning and it decreased over the day. But for the kids who were in the classroom that whole time, they had an elevated level of cortisol for the entire day. So they did not demonstrate that healthy rhythm of cortisol reducing or declining over the course of the day. So in effect, yay for, you know, nature-based learning and forest school in supporting, you know, kids' stress physiology and you know, healthy emotional functioning. But it also, I think, is a little worrisome for the kids who don't have an opportunity to spend time outdoors learning because they're potentially functioning at a chronically stressed level for their entire school day. And too much stress, you know, impairs learning. Another way of thinking about that happier, you know, we talked about smarter, now we're going to talk about happier, I guess, for a little while, is social emotional learning. You know, social emotional learning has to do with things having to do with knowing yourself, self-regulation. It has to do with things having to do with others and how to get along with others. And it has to do with good decision-making, problem-solving, that sort of thing. And at any age, I think being in nature, particularly when kids are allowed to take appropriate, developmentally appropriate risks, and they're being challenged a little bit, and when they're doing this collaboratively in a social situation, social emotional learning can really certainly be practiced and grown at any age. We think of it a little bit more with youth. And Erin, you talked about your son and this amazing trip that he is going on. And that is the kind of wilderness adventure sort of experience that we often think about with something like social emotional learning, where kids really get to test their mettle, figure out what they can do, what their limits are psychologically and physically. They learn to self-regulate. They're really practicing the social skills of leadership and followership and collaboration, problem solving together, communication, conflict resolution, those sorts of things. It's really obvious in something like a wilderness adventure trip. But really, I think it happens all along the developmental spectrum. Even, you know, preschoolers who are doing something like, you know, figuring out how to help each other cross a little stream, you know, across logs or across, you know, some boulders, you know, are figuring out how to collaborate, how to, you know, empathize and take care of each other. They're figuring out their limitations. You know, can I jump that far, you know, from one boulder to another? Or not, you know, it happens at every stage, but setting up the situation so kids have a little bit of risk, and particularly if they get to pair that with both the social support, but also the challenges of social situations, that's really where that social emotional learning piece comes in. And then I think the other piece is the healthier, you know, that certainly includes mental health, which we've talked about, but physical health as well. You know, kids are more active outdoors than they are indoors. And one piece of that is they just have more room to roam, and they get to, you know, engage in much bigger movements and travel farther distances faster. And so that contributes to physical fitness and physical activity. And all of that is super important, certainly for their own physical health now and into the future in terms of, you know, fitness and preventing overweight and the chronic illnesses that go along with that. But there's also a tie-in back to learning and education function where kids who are more physically active and more physically fit learn better. So all of these things are, you know, sort of interacting and all supportive of each other, essentially. And I think ultimately lead to development, positive developmental outcomes, positive educational outcomes.
I want to just comment on your last point there about health. And I'm thinking back to what you were saying about the Bettweiler study of the kids who were going to the forest school kind of experience once a week and had more normal cortisol cycles. And then the kids who stayed inside having elevated cortisol through the day. That's really interesting to me. And I think when you think about the activity that that almost inevitably comes along with getting outside and, you know, at any age, but certainly in children, there are just so many things there that draw them to move and explore and so on. The link between that and lower stress and lower or more reasonable, healthy cortisol levels also has an impact on the immune system. Now, I'm delving into Aaron's area of expertise that, you know, immunity is not a part of my own academic expertise, but I think there are just so many ways that that nature experience at any age can really improve health for all sorts of reasons, but the one pathway also being improved immunity if you're keeping those stress hormones at a reasonable level.
And, you know, the immunity is certainly about stress. It's also about just general physical health and physical activity, but it's also about getting your hands dirty. That play in the soil is actually, as long as it's not got lead in it or arsenic in it or some of those right. bad things, but, you know, getting your hands dirty is actually quite healthy because it contributes to a healthy microbiome. And we're learning much, much more about how the funny bugs that are, you know, inside our bodies are actually quite healthy for us and contribute to cognitive function and prevention of dementia in the elderly. So gardening, playing in the dirt, all of those things are good as long as the soil you're playing in is, you know, doesn't present some environmental risk factors.
Yeah, well, I so appreciate that. I was thinking just even in a very practical way that I know the mornings that I get out and maybe go for a walk or even ride my bike or even just, you know, do something in the house that's active, that I'm much better at staying focused in my clinical practice. And I know the days that I exercise or am outside before work, I finished my charts earlier. And so I think, you know, we can see this at all different stages of life, but I certainly think for children, the more we can introduce them to this at an early age and normalize and make this a part of our family values, being in nature, the better that is and really giving them that kind of lifelong love of the natural world and being, as you said, stewards of that natural world, which we know is so important and is really a big benefit of time in nature is that, you know, you're going to have more care for that nature if you're connected to it. And sometimes when I'm with patients who are even older, maybe experiencing some loneliness, I do a lot of mind-body medicine in my clinical practice. And I will either do through clinical hypnosis or meditation, I'll talk about how they could connect throughout their day to different things, like the sweater that they're wearing and how that feels in their hands. And then they might think about who spun that fiber that was knit into that sweater and where did that fiber come from? And if it was a plant material, for example, cotton, you know, where was that cotton? Who picked that cotton? And what about the seed that was planted in the water that watered that seed and the soil and the nutrients and really getting people to think about how we are connected to nature in ways that we're not even thinking about throughout the day. And I think that can help us feel more connected and less alone in the world as well. Mm-hmm. Kind of connecting back to that connection, which is so important. And I think that gives people a sense of peace and a sense that they're not alone and that we can connect with this natural world on so many levels throughout our days, even when we're not actually in the natural world. But I really appreciate, too, what you were talking about with greenery, either at home or in school. And that feels like a really accessible way to kind of connect people with nature. It's not, you know, you don't necessarily have to be at the forest school, that there's ways we can bring nature into our environments. Is that kind of what the research is showing that, you know, kind of even if it's bringing more of that nature into our existing environments, that that's beneficial?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, thinking about the various environments that kids are in different stages of their lives, All of those are, you know, potential places to sort of intervene and bring more nature in, whether it's the school or the daycare environment or the home environment. And nature can be indoors, you know, taking care of houseplants is a great way to bring some nature into your life. Gardening, doing, you know, things that it might be potted, you know, gardens, it might be raised vegetable beds, it could be all sorts of different things, but, you know, something that allows you to bring more plant life into your environment and to interact with that in ways that are, like you said, Erin, mindful. Gardening can be an incredibly mindful practice for anyone at any age. And I think that's a great practice to introduce that mindfulness, that connection to nature. And it can be done with the youngest kids all the way, you know, to, you know, working with the elderly, for example. It's a great venue for that nature connection. And, you know, that you talked a little bit about that idea of connection to nature early in life being an important time to establish a love of the earth, because that is a window of time where connection to nature can become not only a value, but sort of a practice and in a family, in a child's life. And the more children have those sorts of experiences, they pick up on those family values, you know, around nature and being in nature and doing activities in nature, the more likely they will become stewards of the earth as they become older, children and adolescents and, you know, into adulthood. You know, we protect what we love, and the right time to establish that love of the earth is early on. And I think that there's other reasons for trying to establish that early connection. Some of it has to do with what the child can do for the earth, and some of it has to do with what the earth can do for the child. And we've talked about, you know, already some of the benefits having to do with things like cognitive and emotional health and those sorts of things. But one of the things that I really wanted to bring up and stress is the connection to climate change, because, you know, we are in a emergency and all hands on deck sort of situation with needing to make some very major changes in how we live our lives, the policies that we make and follow, the funds we provide for technology and, you know, interventions. And people think about, you know, this is an emergency right now, and we need to be taking advantage of money and technology. And it's something we're doing right now. But in fact, we're going to need to be doing the all hands on deck thing for generations to come. And we need today's children to feel that connection to Earth so that they become the ones who feel that emergency as they get older, and they take the actions that we need them to continue to do as we are learning, you know, right now what needs to be done. They're going to need to continue to do that. So I think about connection to nature as a long-term climate change strategy, and I really encourage parents to think about that as well.
I want to inject something here, Kathy, because I think that's just, you know, it's so important. You can't even begin to overstate it. I mean, we are in an incredible global crisis. And I think our young people know that. And for many young people, I think it really is presenting them with an existential crisis. And they're terrified. And yet we can manage things better when we feel that there's a way we can contribute. And so I think that letting kids from the earliest age discover and experience what it is to do something to make a difference. I think Erin's daughter, Clara, my granddaughter, was a really good example of this at an early age, I think in large part because she already had learned to love nature in all its forms. She was an outside kid from the time she was an infant, and then went on to do major wilderness trips as her brother is now doing, and also got involved in an internship with a climate change organization where she got to do some speaking and media appearances and, you know, really choosing issues that particularly resonated with her and her age group and so on. But I think that having that sense of some power, at least, is a huge buffer to the overwhelming anxiety that so many kids are experiencing right now. And, you know, any of us at any age, we have to feel like there's something we can do. And I just think there's no better way than to get kids hooked from the earliest stages of life on nature and to really reinforce their potential to do something to make a difference.
I think it is about agency. And that agency comes, I think, partly from the love of the earth. It also comes from the kind of experiences that we talked about before in terms of, you know, these trips that McKinley and Clara have been on are a lot about agency, you know, learning how you take care of yourself, how you make decisions, you know, self-efficacy, initiative, those sorts of things, all are contributory. And the other piece of it is going back to the mental health piece, being connected to nature, experiencing nature, engaging in ways that are good for your mental health actually protects you from some of the worst of the climate change anxiety. And that makes you more effective. You know, some combination of love of the earth and being healed by the earth is going to make you a more effective, let's say, climate change activist. And so it's both, you know.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's a vicious cycle in a
positive way. And we often think about vicious cycles as being really negative, but this is an example of one that really works in multiple directions and ways.
Yes.
So we've talked a lot about the benefits of nature and the importance of getting children exposed to nature early. And I would love it if you could share just some practical things that parents can do to facilitate this connection to nature and to ensure that their children get those important benefits from nature.
Sure. You know, it looks different at every age, but I think that there are a few, I guess, universal principles that you might say. One is, it is really important that kids of all ages have the opportunity to have free, let's just call it play, free play, unstructured time in nature where they are able to either be by themselves in nature, directing their own activities, or they're with friends, directing their own activities, not adult driven or adult structured. Some of the most creative, you know, opportunities for them to imagine, to solve their own problems, to tackle those challenges and figure out what they can and can't do, those things come from time when they are able to act on their own and they're not being directed by adults. And even the young children, obviously you wouldn't leave them alone in nature, you'd have eyes on them, but allowing them to do their own exploration is important. There's also, it's going to sound like like a contradiction, but it's not. Family time or parent-child or grandparent-child time in nature is also equally important. And that is not necessarily a time for the adult to absolutely direct the child's activities, but it is a time for the adult to share their love of nature, their values around nature, the things that they love, the skills they have in nature, to teach something, to mentor, because the research really shows that children grow up to be strong stewards of the environment when they have both that playtime in nature and when they experience nature with a caring adult who shares their care for the earth with that child. So a balance, I think, is really important between the sort of free play, free exploration, and family engagement in nature. And then I think that there's things that you can do. We talked about this a little bit earlier, things you can do in your own home environment. How do you bring nature inside? How do you create more greenery outside? How do you do family activities or encourage hobbies that, you know, allow the child to interact with nature in their own home environment? And then parents have, at least for some period of time, they have a lot of decision-making power. What school, or what, you know, starting with what daycare, then what school, what after school activities. And along the way, one of those, I guess, decision-making factors should be what is the environment that my child is going into? Is it a biodiverse, high quality nature environment? Is there nature-based programming that is going to support, you know, my child's health, happier, healthier, smarter, better stewards of the environment? And, you know, is it an opportunity for, you know, developmental gains through nature exposure and nature engagement? And making those decisions like you have, Erin, to send your child on these, you know, pretty amazing long trips in nature requires a little courage on the part of the parent. You know, you need to be brave yourself, but those are amazing experiences. And you as a parent make a decision to, you know, offer your child that kind of an experience, you're making a huge investment in your child's growth. But it doesn't have to be, you know, Alaska or Yellowstone or something like that for a child to have a really rich opportunity to engage with nature and experience all of those sort of youth development experiences. There are other ways, there are cheaper ways, there are everyday ways that families can engage in nature. And we have an amazing park system in Minnesota. I really encourage families to learn about our state parks, our regional parks, our urban parks. They are incredible resources, and you can experience nature in the most urban of our areas to obviously our most wilderness areas as well.
Well, I so appreciate that you've shared kind of the range of things we can do, from the most simple to the perhaps most extravagant. But I would also say, even, you know, with regard to the resources in our own state of Minnesota, but also across the country, that it's so important for parents to connect with these organizations like YMCA camps, for example. They offer scholarships for families who couldn't afford to pay for their child to maybe go on these wilderness trips, or, you know, even in most of the earlier trips when children get involved in some of these wilderness camp experiences, for example. They start out right here. You know, they literally leave from the camp and they go canoeing in the Boundary Waters. Or, and then, you know, there's, of course, so many other wonderful organizations like Wilderness Inquiry who are making nature experiences accessible to people of all abilities. And so I think that it's really great for people to get connected with so many of the amazing organizations, Children in Nature Network, and the amazing programming that is available through our park systems. And a lot of these do have resources for families who can't afford to pay for the full price of something. So encourage parents to, you know, do their research and to seek out the supports that are available if these sound like things they might be interested in supporting their kids and getting connected to the nature and the amazing benefits of time in nature.
I would add to that, Erin, that parents can be good advocates within the early care and education settings where their children are receiving care while parents are at work, to really encourage those kinds of facilities to integrate nature experience into their programs. I'm just thinking about one of our supporting partners, Kinderberry Hill, here in recent years has really shifted to a huge focus on nature experience as a part of their programming. And so that's an example of a place that has been around for a very long time, but that's a relatively new thing. And they've really kind of become experts in how to do that and in ways that are just, you know, so tied to all these benefits that Kathy's done such a great job of highlighting. And so I think there's, you know, there's a lot of opportunity for change. And when parents understand or grandparents understand that these things are so important to children's health and happiness and intelligence and so on, that we can really, really, you know, put a little gentle pressure give some encouragement to organizations that our children are interacting with already, and try to really make sure that happens in all the different settings where our children are living and learning.
And it's as easy as going into your backyard and sitting your baby down in the grass.
We did a lot of that with your kids, yes, didn't we? I was so lucky to live 5 blocks away from Erin when her children were young. And I think about the countless hours I spent outdoors with the kids and how good that was for me, never mind the children. So
it's
lots
wonderful.
Of opportunities. Kathy Jordan, thank you so much for being here. It's great fun to reconnect with you. Kathy and I saw each other just last week in Colorado at the International Conference of the Children and Nature Network. That was one of the more inspiring conferences I've ever attended. People from all over the world, young leaders, people of every ethnic and geographic background, just doing amazing work to connect children and right on up into adulthood, connect people to nature for all kinds of reasons and in a lot of different ways. So check out the Children in Nature Network online. We'll link to that, and you can get a lot of additional information. But a special thanks to Kathy Jordan, who's Director of Research there, and also at the University of Minnesota. We're so glad you could be with us today, Kathy. And thanks to those of you who tuned in today. We hope you'll be back again next week when we'll have another guest and an interesting topic for sure.
Well, and I'm Erin, and I know what I'm going to do now. I'm going to go for a walk outside.
I'll go with you.
All right. It's a deal.
Okay.
Well, have a wonderful day. Thanks for tuning in.
Content copyrighted by Marty and Erin Erickson. All rights reserved. Visit MomEnough.com for an archive of all Mom Enough shows and many free downloadable resources on child development, parenting, and maternal health and well-being.
Do you think I'll have a show called Kid Enough someday?